Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
We are back from our break.
We are back. We made it.
Fresh legs. I'm refreshed.
Yes.
I've been wanting to put episodes out like for the last 3-4 weeks.
Right.
And every week when I don't have anything to play,
it
hurts.
It's okay. We're back now.
Yes, we are. Yes. And this week we are talking about healing from church hurt around money. This came up, actually, I got the idea as we were doing something in the Unfit Christian group.
Okay.
And it's something that frequently comes up just in general in faith conversations, particularly with us, about preachers taking the money and why you giving all your money to the church and tithing and all these outlandish offerings.
It is definitely, it's an ever-present critique.
Right.
Especially in the face of prosperity preaching.
Exactly.
Some ostentatious displays of wealth.
So we're going to talk about it today. And I don't think that there are any announcements that we got to get out the way.
Church announcements.
Nope. I think we're good. Okay. So let's talk about just where this comes from.
Okay.
So economics in Black people is a different topic. Like it's
a situation within a situation.
Yes, it's there are things that specifically apply to us.
Yeah.
And so those things impact the way we move through life, which does make its way to how we handle our giving, whether it's faith-based or charity based or whatever. And so we do have to consider the economics, because from the moment we arrived here, we've been at the bottom of that priority list.
Right. Yeah. But yet also at the top.
Okay. So explain that.
Okay. So at the bottom of the priority list in having any of that wealth or holding any of that wealth, but also at the top being representative of what would make somebody wealthy, you know, or what has the highest value. So by assigning a value to Black bodies, these bodies have a high capacity to create wealth, but that wealth is designed to flow through our fingers. The system design doesn't allow for us to hold on to what we really produce.
Right. So the ability to create wealth, but not to retain it.
Exactly.
And that's intentional and persist. So these are things that we have to acknowledge as challenges, because, I mean, you arrive as slaves, of course.
Right.
Like you said, you have a value as a person, but you cannot see the benefits of that value.
No, not at all.
And now is, let's just skip history all the way to the 21st century, where Black people are targeted through housing, mortgage lending and things like that. Like the system still functions in a way to extract the value from out of the community
that creates it. Definitely. Right. And so in acknowledging where some of the lack of confidence or even the sources of pain, where this financial critique would come from, otherwise trustworthy institutions, trustworthy, I give you the quote fingers, like banks asking you to make deposits or companies selling insurance for your business or your home or your life insurance, asking you to pay premiums, and institutions like definitely in real estate, the issuing of mortgages or the lack thereof. These institutions have been allowed to participate to some degree in economic terrorism, because it's a systemic removal of the wealth creation from the community that created it. And that persists regardless of the laws. Like, we look at that canon of civil rights laws in the late 60s and say, okay, this is supposed to be what levels our playing field. But it's been an additional 50 years. So whereas you made strides on one end, maybe earning more money, being able to purchase a home, even if you couldn't purchase everywhere, or being able to have access to certain institutions, things meant to grow your capacity to build wealth, going to college, being able to purchase vehicles that or purchase products that mature and grow in wealth. Now you can see that those organizations, those companies changed how they did business to continue to benefit from a persistent consumer only class.
Right. And so in addition to that economic terrorism that's always on your back, taking out of your pocket.
Yep.
There's something to be said for the head start that whites got over Black people.
Yes.
So as an example, my parents paid off their home.
Yeah.
Okay. So you mentioned real estate and, mm-hmm. and the ability to acquire real estate, but also the ability to hold, maintain real estate through generations. So they paid off their home. And so there's a house there that can be used for, I mean, we're older now, yep. but it could be a family home yep. that yep. you don't have to pay to live in. So you can use that money for other things and put back into the economy. So this is now, you know, 2020
mm-hmm.
and we're getting to the point now where we actually have a family home. And I mean, like,
we're in the same situation.
Yeah. So, and then along with that comes the lessons that you yeah. learn by having that.
Yep.
Like, how does this allow you to move differently? How can I use that money in a better way to continue to build that wealth?
Yep.
Things like that. Like, just getting there in the 21st century is insufficient when it comes to making comparisons to people who have had that head start and mm-hmm. and maybe, like we talked about, generational wealth and being able to get these large sums of money upon the death of a loved one. And like yeah. I said, owning this property and things like that, like people who have had the opportunity to build that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're out in front. And so comparing yourself as a Black person in America to that is tenuous, because like, how, on what grounds do you think that you're going to be able to compete? And so when we look in our churches,
mm-hmm.
particularly the evangelical model, you have Black churches, particularly mega churches,
mm-hmm.
who are following another model that they didn't create.
Yep.
And so it's easy to try to compare, but then when you actually dig into that comparison, it's not possible.
Exactly.
And so you're in church and you're trying to do the things that you see all these other churches doing, and you're not able to do it, and you're frustrated, and the leadership has to call and request the money through offerings or give, you know, drives mm-hmm. or whatever from a community that doesn't have it.
Right.
And so, yes, that breeds this type of hurt. And so, yeah, that's why we.
Yeah.
I mean, even now, I think, well, in 2018, there was a study done where white families have 6.5 times the wealth of Black families.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be careful. Well, if you're going to compare at all.
Well, you have to be. We have to be careful not to refer to our community as a monolith.
Right.
So there are segments of our community that have experienced that generational wealth transfer. The fact that we can even have a conversation about economic hurt within the Black church means that the Black church is an economic vehicle in our community. Mm-hmm. So wealth and the ability to grow, the ability to deepen roots for the stabilization of a community, that has existed. There have been segments that have been successful. We tend to overspeak about those negative examples of when the business was not transacted well
mm-hmm.
and people have gotten lazy mm-hmm. in their critiques, but they've also don't care to kind of show the nuances between, let's say, not having enough controls over how you collect money, like, you know, like having an old school financial office, mm-hmm. you know, somebody volunteering versus what sometimes some churches can produce, the equivalent of CFOs.
Right.
And compared to the money that they bring in and the what they show for that investment or what they show for that support. We're having this conversation because we have those outstanding examples of people who did it the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
But we do need to interrogate why we allow the critique to stand if we're still saying we need the church to do so many things.
Exactly. Exactly. So you don't get a view of churches who do it the right way mm-hmm. or are on the path to doing it the right way. So what you end up with is a very small percentage of poor examples.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, the AME church has over 3,800 pastors. So that's mm-hmm. 3,800 churches. You may hear in a given year maybe about four pastors.
Five,
and I'm not yeah. specifically AME pastors. Yeah. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying four pastors
mm-hmm.
that have done it the wrong way. And so you take what's going on in AME church, add it to what's going on in the Black Baptist church, and then non-denominational churches and all mm-hmm. these things. Like, there's a lot of people who are either doing a good job or not doing a bad job.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Money in the church cannot be 100% 24/7 continuously scandalized.
Yeah,
it's not meant to be that way. And right. I'm saying this from a standpoint of, I feel like optics are important,
mm-hmm.
right? So as we acknowledged earlier, you sometimes have these models being pursued by these churches that they did not design,
mm-hmm.
that when you peel back the layers on the model and actually look at how all these parts come together, you might see that the behavior, I don't care if we label it what it is, but the behavior itself is meant to be predatory. It might be meant to be manipulative. That has to be acknowledged because it's an extension of these instances that can produce pain and separation.
You mean which predatory? The church model?
So the model by which, let's say, funds are collected and then how they're employed and used. Mm-hmm. Optics being important, I don't believe that churches should enrich themselves and then be planted in extremely poor communities. The funds entrusted to the church for the bettering of the community that it is in, the community that it supports inside and outside of its walls, you start to wonder, where does it show? Mm-hmm. So there are some leaders, some faith leaders who have earned the critique that they personally look wealthy. And the argument has been made that they have spawned businesses from what they are able to do. Granted that, I also don't believe that you should be leading or earning 7-8 figures and in a church model and the community around you is crippling poor.
Yeah, I don't even know how that's possible. Unless you're like a casino drawing money out of the community.
And are you making the investment back into the programs and the services that actually reach outside of your walls?
Yeah,
some people might have the critique of where they're, you know, where are things going.
A good story will travel.
Yeah.
And so if you have a mega church that is bringing in double digit millions of dollars, there's a lot of people contributing to that. That means there's a lot of people talking about that.
Yeah.
And so those are people going to their families and at their salons and barbershops and talking about it. And so the story gets out because nobody wants to hear the story of the church that's managing just well enough that they were able to buy some chairs.
Build and fund.
Yeah. So like there's churches that are doing that all over the place and doing the right things. But when it's grandiose, like, yes, you see it and you hear about it.
Right.
Because we tell the story.
Yeah.
And so
these aren't new critiques, though.
No. These are not. We don't always talk about money. And that's not a black people thing. That's just, you know, people don't always. Yeah, it's just people don't talk about their money. And so that leads to secrets or just lack of information about how to do things. So, for instance, I went to a finances seminar at a church. I mean, not at a church. It was for black churches.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the points that they were making was that a lot of these successful churches, like financially successful churches, or even some that are struggling, one thing that they have that a lot of black churches don't seem to have is endowments. And so when I was sitting there listening, I was like, what endowments? Who's dying and leaving money in large sums to
You'd
the church?
Surprised.
Like people, you have so many difficulties just getting people to give an offering and all that stuff. But just to hear these different stories about these churches who are being floated from endowments, even though the church may be struggling, they've gotten a $30 million endowment from someone who died, you know, 10 years ago. And that's been able to keep them solvent.
Mm-hmm.
So like there's things about the business of church that we don't know. We're still learning and it would help us. But in order to do that, we have to figure out how to move past the issues that we have around the money.
Right.
Because the truth is, a lot of people would prefer that their church is doing the right things in the community and with the members. That's part of the heart of the critique. It's like, we expected you to do this, but you're not. And so if we do expect these faith institutions to actually perform a certain way, how is that funded?
Right.
Funding matters. It's almost like we expect that they're just supposed to do it.
I don't think so. I think that, so we asked the question, how should it be funded? The answer is that it's going to be funded the way that it always has been. What we are, I believe, discussing is that there needs to be transparency, because in that transparency, you're going to win back the confidence of skeptical, you know, people who want to participate and probably want to participate financially, regardless of their ability to do so, maybe the way in their mind they conceive that they would, you know, most likely want to do. People can be very humble in their actual, you know, cash rate, you know, ability to contribute to something, mm-hmm. but they're rich in something else. I believe that what is always leveraged, whatever any of our churches is doing, is what we do in kind, the level at which we volunteer, the level at which we give our own time, the level at which we give of our own talents. Black churches and Black families at one point in time were so intertwined that every family represented an extra set of manpower, hands, talents, gifts that you gave to the building on a volunteer basis. Not everybody was getting paid.
Right.
So I feel like we're saying the money is flowing in. How is it being used? And can we acknowledge that when it has been misused, that that causes great damage, and how to get beyond that?
Yeah, you're alluding to the actual history of the formation of this Black church. And so we talked about, and on another episode with Dr. Lee, like, he mentioned the hush hoppers. The hush hoppers were basically a community of slaves who would sneak off and form community together. Then those communities began to morph into family communities, mm-hmm. and things, communities that would do things in the neighborhood and around in the surrounding areas and things like that. And so this was the hub of Black life. This is not just African-American life, this is just Black life. Like, the community element is so vital to what we do. That's why Black people, as much as we may hate it sometimes, we are a people of faith, like different faiths.
Yes.
But faith is a inseparable central, yeah. component of yeah. our lives. Mm-hmm. And so part of the frustration is this thing that we can't get rid of is not serving us the way that we would prefer.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we get it to be that point? Because some would just choose to say, well, I'm not dealing with it at all. Mm-hmm. And that causes another set of problems, because then you disconnected not just from faith, but a lot of times it's just the community.
Right.
It's a loss of community.
So it's not a disconnection from faith. I'm thinking it's a disconnection from fellowship. There were other purposes for that gathering. So that alludes to the community break. And we have talked about, I believe that the progression over the seasons has shown that we're not, you know, afraid to kind of say that regardless of what was intended, it's what has actually happened that needs to be held accountable for.
Yeah.
So the missteps, and then I think, you know, whether it be a cultural or generational tendency to gloss over,
mm-hmm.
or to not want to appear to be disrespectful or somehow upending status quo or traditions unnecessarily,
yeah.
has contributed to the inability to call things out as they are and deal with them as they are and be constructive and move forward. And not least of which would be, you know, financial impropriety or whatever. But at the end of the day, there is no separation from your faith. That is not the tenet of this particular, unless the pain of what might have ever impacted you, you know, has caused you to question something much deeper than just your membership at a particular church.
Right. People who walk away from their churches, yeah. or just the church in general, are still trying to find the connection to a body of faith.
Right. I definitely feel like if you get to a point where you're seeking that fellowship, and the lens through which you measure whether or not you're a good fit, just like you would measure whether or not you're a good fit in a club, mm-hmm. or in an organization, you know, you're not going to strive for membership into something that does not reflect you or does not reflect your values. Unlike the churches we might have grown up in,
mm-hmm.
before we realized that we were free to not go to mama's church, right. or grandmama's church or the family church. I think that when you add back the authenticity of yourself in making that decision, you align yourself with ministries that you don't mind supporting.
Mm-hmm.
So I do feel like the problem takes care of itself, granted that you can work through a healing process or work through a decision-making process that affirms your intelligence, doesn't ask you to ignore just to keep the peace. And that's like just with relationships. You can have a bad relationship experience. Things happen and they will. But we don't want people throwing away opportunities and the need for fellowship,
mm-hmm.
and the need for community and the need for maintaining support of our institutions, especially in times like this. I feel the same way about our churches that I feel a way about our colleges. If we do not take care of them, they will disappear. Mm-hmm. Right. So we're talking about the thousands of churches that we have, not the tens of thousands that we've lost over the years because of all manner of circumstances, not least of which has been being unable to come back from financial impropriety that costs us big. It's not so much the investments that we make, but what about the things that we've lost? What about, you know, when we were told that the business is being handled one way and it's truly being handled another? What about the loss of faith and the loss of confidence and the loss of respect that we go through when our leaders or our people that we trust to conduct affairs that affect us, mm-hmm. we trust them to conduct themselves in a way that ultimately makes us all, you know, look good and affirms a good faith effort to be honest, to have integrity. When people fall short in these areas, I think that's where you get compartmentalization, where people are like, yeah, the money's messed up, but I'm still, don't nobody want to hear that.
Yeah.
Especially if as a move of faith, I invested in the business of church. And you exploit my move of faith to capitalize on my investment in your business of church. Yeah. You have to be able, especially if, you know, I know people who have tithed the way they've been trained to tithe. And I'm talking about money that I thought that could have been spent better, you know, doing. And I get all of that, but they did it that way. And I am glad that they are a part of ministries that did not embarrass them, did not break their heart, because it was more money than they had ever seen in their life. Mm-hmm. And they thought about how their faith experience had kind of been processed through that church, the business of that church, and they invested right. in the business of that church. And I'm glad that their faith leader did not betray them.
So I want to be clear that the vast majority of Black churches
are
not
right.
failing
yeah.
their members and financially or otherwise. The conversation does tend to gravitate towards those that are, but.
And it's not just Black churches that exploit.
No, it's not. It's not. But that's
a whole nother show. But right, it right. needs to be said
right,
because,
right.
you know, we center ourselves. But let's be clear.
Exactly.
Our churches are running well.
Yep.
And when they are not running well, it's not just our churches.
And also the vast majority of Black church leadership is not living that well, like financially. Mm-hmm. Like it's a tough job, just like you go into teaching and you cannot expect to be a millionaire just from teaching. People who go into this profession, yeah. they do it because they love it, because they love people. They want to make a difference. That difference is not usually, that it does not usually translate into wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the life that they chose. And right. they're not asking anyone to feel sorry for them. But it needs to be said that we acknowledge that that's most of the people. Like I'm in school with people who are going to do this, and they already know, like they're taking classes on how to better manage their finances, because it's not going to be a lot that they're going to have to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, there are problems, and you may have had problems in your experience, or you may have heard of problems.
Mm-hmm.
There are many more
benefits.
Right. Or places without problems.
Definitely.
There are, however, some things that churches can do, because I know we have some church leadership pastors, a few that follow us or listen to us.
Hey.
So in terms of the church's responsibility, most people know this, but people don't have to support you mm-hmm. what you're doing. This is your thing. It's almost like if you just had a business where you was just selling like cupcake sprinkles. Like,
right.
We don't
Rental
have to buy
spoons.
That. Right. And especially in a situation where there's an abundance of churches. You know, people can do what they want. And so yeah. that looks like something. The ministry models need to adapt to or acknowledge the fact that these people could do this anywhere and mm-hmm. they're choosing to do it here.
Mm-hmm.
So how am I going to serve them? It's okay, you know, if you want. This is not my thing,
uh-huh.
but I see a lot of churches giving, like doing a whole lot of missions work in another mm-hmm. country.
Okay.
and members are struggling that are donating to the missions work.
They could do missions in the neighborhood. Right.
The mission, you don't even have to get on a plane. You can just
for real.
You can walk around the corner and start your missions work there.
And yes.
I know you wanna colonize people to the gospel and all that stuff, but the members who are contributing to your ministry have a need in the community, and if your ministries aren't structured to address those needs,
this is what I was saying,
you are hurting the people who you supposed to be supporting.
Exactly. But not only did I allude to that earlier, but it connects to other conversations we've had about honoring who is actually in that church, who is helping that church to run. And when we talk about even women in the church, right? The ministries, the outreach, the compassion needs to meet people where they are in the pews. It can't be something that doesn't somehow reciprocate for the support. And then, as I'm saying, the investment in the business of that church, you're asking for that. And what is produced from that, that's what has to bear fruit.
Yeah. And it's not just financial fruit. Like, these people have legitimate needs. So, for instance, I was at a situation, I was at a meeting, and the church was putting up all these stats about all of these people they helped in these baskets that they gave on Thanksgiving and all these other things. And I'm like, I ain't never seen this church and a march down to, like, we right here in the nation's capital when marches were happening all the time. I ain't see them mobilizing their congregants to go out there and actually do something to help those parents who are losing those children. And all, like, there's lots of things you could do to help. And it's cute to give out baskets and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you're really not addressing the needs of Black people in Black communities in this country, you are failing.
To some degree, yes. But it needs to be said. Like we say, we say things and be like, dang. But no, that needs to be said. Yeah.
I mean, there was a church who did it great. Another church in this area, when Bennett College was going to lose accreditation, they donated over $1 million to help them. Mm-hmm. Like, that's something to do. That's something important.
But these are historical functions of the power of the Black church to throw. When the support is there, we throw our weight around. Mm-hmm. And we do. And again, shout out to the ones, the ministries, the church leaders that are getting it right, because these are vital lifelines. Right. You know, those boxes, they are cute, but they are more than cute, because a lot of households are not getting the food support that they need.
Yes,
and that's a huge help, you know.
Right.
One of the things that I always encourage people to look to their churches to provide is transportation assistance. And I know it's not so much, you know, saying, oh, your church should have it, but I'm saying that the investment, right? The investment in that business that purchases those buses or those vans, and you see them and you have a fleet. I think it's okay to say, a way that I can see the manifestation of my investment in the business of this church that has allowed you to grow and have this fleet of 20, 30 passenger vans, is that the seniors of your church need transportation to wherever, you know, within reason. But these types of ideas, because that is a segment of our community that is underserved by the services that you think would be readily available.
Right. So
it's never enough.
There is definitely a need to address immediate needs.
Yes.
So people need to eat. People need transportation. Yes. And also, people need those things because of structural things that are wrong. So if you just choose to meet the immediate need, you're always going to be meeting the immediate need until you always run out of the ability to do it.
Right.
You need to address the structural need in addition to meeting this immediate need.
Right.
So if I see one without the other, either way, if you just all structural, like I remember this pastor in D.C. always going to jail. Like, I'm not gonna say his name, but he was always protesting. He was always doing a thing. If you don't address the immediate need, then you going to jail is not helping anyone. Also, if you giving out baskets all the time and not helping anyone to not have to need baskets all the time, you're not doing it.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, the people's responsibility.
Yes.
You got to look at the church like what the scripture says, you reap what you sow.
Yeah.
Okay. Whether that's money, time, whatever. Right. Like you invest into the church. And if you hope to get anything out of it, you would need to be investing in. There are people who consume only.
Yep.
That's a lot of people, actually. But for your church to actually be what it can be, it needs people investing.
Exactly. And I don't think you can have, you can't have that harsh of a critique being that far out on the sidelines for, you know, any sustained amount of time.
But that's most of the people, though. So in any given church, I was talking to someone about this last week. The number of tithers is around 10-15%.
Mm-hmm.
That's like over 80% of the people not giving. Now, here's the part where we have to adjust. The people have to adjust. We've been trained that your investment in the church is monetary only. Mm-hmm. That is not true. Your investment in the church is everything that you give to the church.
Yep.
So if you're giving your talent, if you're a musician and you're maybe not getting paid from the church, if you are a lawyer and you're helping the church, you know, with permits, if you're like all of that matters.
Mm-hmm.
And those are ways that we have to understand are acceptable ways to support your church.
Yep.
Even if you don't have the money, there's plenty of things that that church needs that. Now, of course, the church does need money to run.
Mm-hmm.
But your lack of money in whatever situation should not preclude you
from giving,
supporting the church. Yeah. Also time. Which, churches ask for a lot of time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, come to the pastor's anniversary banquet or come to like all of this. It's a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Count it. Like I count it. Like if it's me, like I'm, it's not like I'm billing them for anything, but I am understanding that I'm increasing what we're able to do by mm-hmm. adding what I do to what everyone else does. And so that's what I mean when I say you have to be able to invest. Like you have to be able to provide something into that church so mm-hmm. that church can actually grow because of you. Because you matter to that body, not just whatever comes out of your wallet. It's a lot of stuff that you get to offer.
Yeah. I mean, even on that point, I would be so the way that I just heard what you were saying, when you talk about that in-kind donation, we've been working with churches for years to recruit mentors. And the idea that, first of all, time is the most valuable, precious thing. Mm-hmm. People feel like they really don't have a lot of it. And yes, there's always some entity in our life asking us for it. But as with anything that you hope to cultivate, any sort of bond, any sort of relationship that you hope to cultivate toward a positive is going to ask you for your time. And it won't always be convenient. It won't always be feasible. You won't always be able to give it. But I would really like to reinforce that giving is a disposition. Being a giver, being a cheerful giver is a disposition. It has nothing to do with having a smile on your face as you hand over the coins.
Mm-hmm.
It has everything to do with having a cheerful heart, a giver's heart. I am assisting you from an altruistic agape space that says, I give to you because I hope to be given to. And that's just the balance. That's the great way of the world. And churches can definitely benefit from us giving our time, because that sometimes is what we ask the church that we're really asking it for in a monetary way. We want the church to show up in so many different ways, tangible ways in our life, but it's not the church itself. It's the community within it.
Mm-hmm.
When you give that time, I feel like the universe will give it back to you. Like, I feel like one of the ways I gave them my talents was cooking or mm-hmm. whatever. The way I get it back is the ability to be mentored and to mentor. But it asks of me this exchange of time and talent.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, somebody like the pastor shouldn't always be going to visit the people in the hospital.
Yeah, there's you ministries can do
to
do it.
That. Yeah, so and that helps build the cohesion of the family. They know that, you know, Amira's going to show up if grandma, mm-hmm. you know, falls again. So that's important. Like people need to come to funerals, you know, all of that matters.
Yeah.
We also want the people to be intentional about like seeing those invisible churches, the ones that don't get talked about, because they're doing the work. Like for every church that you've heard that something went wrong, there's over a dozen
and
churches.
And like you
where
said,
it's
only a handful.
Right. So you can just find any other church that is actually doing something. People give to what they want. Like you said, like it actually does feel good to do that. Like if you see somebody in need, and like you can help and you do help. That's a great thing. I mean, people giving, I see people every year giving like money to, and these are not, I don't want to diminish the value of these charities, but mm-hmm. people will give like 6% of their paycheck to spaying cats. And that's a real charity.
Yes.
And like people love giving, people out here giving, doing a whole bunch of stuff. Yeah, you could give. Yeah. giving is the currency of the world. Like in an ideal
world.
It's
the way
world.
Of the community. Like we started this conversation saying, why would people not give what they really could? And maybe their personal situation is whatever it is. But there's such a strong tradition of us covering one another. Yep. That it's just the greater participation in that. And I always talk about tithing outside of the church. So it's but so much that my membership affiliation can really account for when you talk about being of the disposition of showing compassion, care, support to other people. It's but so much is going to happen within the transactions that I have with my church. But is that my disposition? And I'm not saying, because people know me in real life, I'm not saying that I'm always on. What I'm saying is I am oriented toward giving the gift. I know the value is in time. I know the value is in showing up. I don't have to do everything all the time like Martha. I can be intentional about what carries the most value.
Yeah. And that's a critical point.
Yeah.
There's nowhere in the Bible where it says, whatever you give has to be to this one location, and that's it. Like if you give the First Baptist Church of Cedar Heights, whatever, that's not the way it works.
Right.
No one ever said that. If you have someone that you know in that maybe a coworker or a family member or something, they need something that week or whatever, yeah, give it to. I've had plenty of weeks where I'll sit in a church service and often come around, and I'm not putting anything there. I just gave to Sarah at the not Sarah.
not Sarah.
Right. I just gave to someone else that week, and that was everything I had, and so I feel okay about it. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm good with it. Or you know, maybe I want to do something else in another ministry that day, or so another charity or something like that. Like that's just what it is, and you know, the giving is the exercise. The giving is the thing that, like you said, builds up the community. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm giving to the community, I feel less angst about the fact that the church may not be doing what I wanted to do with the money. I'm doing what I want to do with my money.
I'm the church. Yeah. Exactly.
So, I mean, there's ways to move past, you know, being stuck in a position where the church, I don't trust them with the money because some church in some state that I don't live in,
right?
I heard that they did something with the money. Like,
we have to be honest that we are, our church, a church in America exists within a capitalist economic system. So try as we may to separate money from the ministries, we can't, because that is the environment in which the church has to exist anyway.
Right.
So at some basis, we have to line ourselves up with that which we are willing to support in finance and in kind.
Right.
You know, that reflects our values and our beliefs about community and continuity and spirituality. That is the crux of this conversation. Staying out of that particular arena. We always talking about pay attention. You pay attention all around you. These are our institutions. So even in 2020, our churches still fill vital roles in making sure communication gets out to our community, making sure that we are participating civically in our communities. Our churches are polling places. Our churches are places where people can have meetings about politics. Yeah. Our churches are places where people can talk about social issues and social justice issues.
Yeah. They're gyms. People get healthy in churches.
Exactly. And increasingly, because we are tuning in and dialing in and requiring more and giving more, because we are doing this work, our churches are moving into dynamic ministries and assisting us with the immediate needs and the systemic structural needs. We have, I think in the last 3 years, I've heard more about churches being intentional about supporting the mental health of their parishioners than I have the previous 25 years. Mm-hmm. Just understanding that, you know, demystifying and normalizing these conversations adds depth and richness to the value of the institution in the community. So it is happening, but we have to get real about, are you in or aren't you? Are you in or aren't you? It's the same thing with our schools. If you've been listening, I love our schools. I think something miraculous happens when you have young Black scholars learning from older Black scholars who respect the transfer of knowledge. It is something that I've participated in. It is something that I've benefited from. But I'm going to tell you right now, if we do not take care of that which we have built, no one else will. No one is going to step in and take care of our things. This is our thing. Mm-hmm. In a world where increasingly people are getting real fuzzy about whose things are these things, this is our thing. Mm-hmm. And we can be lulled into a sense of security that I don't think we should ever benefit from, that we won't need our things.
Because when they're not there, it's going to be impossible to get them back.
Okay. Our things. So it is important for us to not, this is not, you know, separation. This is not any sort of code. It ain't no code. Take care of your stuff.
Yeah. The best way to be ineffective at influencing something is to do it from, critique it from the outside.
Yeah. You hating from outside the
club. Get in there and participate. Be an influencer.
Yes,
in there.
And that goes for all of our faith institutions. We're having this conversation about the Black church, and I am not in a position to critique Black faith in Islam and how that's manifesting in the support of their mosques, in the support of how they serve the community. But I will tell you this. Certain things are going to be representative in our houses of worship across different faiths because we are a people. So there are things culturally that are going to show up there. All I'm saying is take care of your things.
For Faith Uncut, I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.